I'd like to welcome everyone to today's MicroLink seminar. I'm Kristen Oplanik from USAID's Bureau for Economic Growth, Education, and the Environment. For those joining us in DC, please take a moment to silence your phones as to not interrupt the presentation. And a special welcome to those joining us online from around the world. We're looking forward to your participation in the chat room. Today, our speakers are going to help us think critically about an important question. Is market systems development inherently a resilience approach? USAID released its resilience policy and program guidance at the end of 2012. Since then, programs have been put in place in several places around the world that attempt to be this bridge between humanitarian assistance and longer-term development assistance. Naturally, functioning market systems are a key factor in resilience on multiple levels, household, community. Recently, USAID's Leveraging Economic Opportunities Project released a publication that you can find on MicroLinks called Market Systems for Resilience, which takes a look at the synergies and tensions between the two concepts, backed by evidence where we have it. Now, there are some significant evidence gaps. I encourage you to take a look at the paper so that you can help us know what those are and help us to fill those. This makes sharing our learning from the field all the more important to fill those gaps. Mercy Corps is one of the current leaders in resilience programming, and they have kindly offered to share some of what they've discovered with us here today. So let me briefly introduce our speakers. Their full bios are available on MicroLinks. Elliot Levine is a senior technical advisor on Mercy Corps' Environment, Energy, and Climate Technical Support Unit. He serves as the focal point for climate change adaptation while playing a key role in the agency's Global Resilience Initiative. Elliot's work focuses on the development of a strategic resilience assessment approach for applying a resilience lens to strategy development and program design. That's a mouthful. Before joining Mercy Corps, he spent 8 years at World Wildlife Fund working on climate adaptation across Asia, Africa, and Latin America. Sasha Mensch is Director of Economic and Market Development for Mercy Corps, where she provides institutional leadership and program support on all aspects of economic development for Mercy Corps globally. In particular, Sasha is driving the expansion of Mercy Corps' market-driven programming and private sector engagement. She has over 20 years of international development experience, including postings in Indonesia and Bosnia, in the areas of economic and market development, financial services provision, enterprise development, private sector engagement, and community revitalization in transitional environments. So welcome.
All right. Well, thanks everybody online for who's attending around the world. We hear there's lots of people attending online. And to those of you who in DC who are in the room with us this morning, thanks for coming and having breakfast with us and choosing to spend Sunday morning with us. Sasha and I are both very excited to be here to talk to you all a little bit about our work on resilience and market systems development. Just to give you an idea of what we're going to talk about, I'm going to spend the first half of our presentation, roughly 15 minutes, talking about Mercy Corps' resilience approach, the way we conceptualize and think about resilience, and the way we operationalize that concept in our work. And then Sasha's going to come in with some concrete case study examples from Nepal and Uganda about that should help to ground that theory in particular context. So just to jump right in so we can move right along to the conversation at the end, there are four key messages we're hoping to get across to you guys in this presentation. The first is that although market systems development as an approach can contribute to increases in resilience, it's not inherent in the approach. Second, resilience is more than just increased income and productivity. While those are important for well-being and can have important contributions to resilience, we need to consider a broader set of capacities that communities need as well. Third, market systems development can support resilience efforts, but it has to be done in an intentional way. And we'll go through the approach that I'm going to go through that Mercy Corps has developed is one example of how to do that. And fourth, market systems development and resilience share a set of common principles. I'm sure that in the beginning talk that I'm going to give, as well as what Sasha's going to talk about, you're going to recognize some approaches, some methodologies that sound familiar. That's probably a good thing. So just to take a quick step back, why are we talking about resilience now? The concept of resilience has been around for quite some time, a couple decades at this point. But increasingly, over the past 3 to 5 years, it seems it pops up in almost every single conversation we have in the development world now, right? What's changed? The concept of resilience hasn't changed so much, but our world has been rapidly changing for sure. The frequency, the magnitude, and the severity of reoccurring shock and stresses around the world have placed a new emphasis on this concept of resilience. We have problems like reoccurring drought in the Horn of Africa, conflict across the Sahel region, rapid political and social change in countries like Myanmar, and increasing severe events like typhoons and hurricanes. And what this has caused is this simple, perfect world picture here to be far from the reality of what's true. I think this is something we'd all ideally like to see, that over time, and as we invest development dollars into a particular place, well-being increases at a steady pace. But this is not the case for almost any place that we work. It often looks much more like this, where we see an increase in well-being over time as institutions like Mercy Corps and others invest in a place, only for some shock or stress, as indicated with this red, with these red dots, to occur, and then we see some sort of a loss in well-being, right? And this, I think all of us in the room can probably think to a time and a place where this has happened, not just once, but repeatedly, even in the face of us working in a place for quite some time. And this situation is exactly what resilience is trying to address, this constant up and down in terms of well-being, even in the face of large-scale development investments. So then what is resilience? We see large definitions about it. We hear lots of conversations about it. Well, graphically, it might look something like this. Well, let's say Mercy Corps works in a particular place with a group of people to increase their well-being over time, but does so in a particular way that there's a focus on giving them the ability to manage shocks and stresses so that their well-being is not lost when they occur. So in that case, when faced with that shock or stress, they would either take less of a hit in terms of well-being and recover more quickly than they would have previously, or ideally continue to develop in the face of that shock or stress. What this also illustrates is that resilience is not separate from our development goals. It's not something we're trying to achieve in addition to well-being or in addition to our food security goals. Resilience supports those ongoing goals. So Mercy Corps, like other institutions, has our own definition of resilience. Like others, it's pretty long and complex. It says that resilience is the capacity of communities in complex socio-ecological systems to learn, cope, adapt, and transform in the face of shocks and stresses. So it's a lot, but there are three things that I think we can take a look at that I just want to hone in on in this definition. The first is that we recognize that communities exist within complex socio-ecological systems, in that we recognize that in order to build the resilience of communities, we need to understand the broader context, the ecological context, the political and social context, and the economic context that communities are an integral part of. That's the first one. The second is that there's an explicit reference to shocks and stresses that we're building resilience to, and that to build resilience, we need to focus on the third bit, which is the capacity of communities to manage for those shocks and stresses. So definitions are nice, but what does resilience mean in practice for Mercy Corps? What does this actually look like in terms of operationalizing this on the ground on a day-to-day basis? Over the past 3 years, through Mercy Corps' resilience initiative, working across our resilience hubs in East and West Africa, and North and Southeast Asia, we've been piloting different approaches to designing resilience building programs, to running assessments, to monitoring the progress that we're making towards achieving our goals, and to building an evidence base for our approaches. And through all that work across all of our regions, we've put together this process framework, which I'll walk you through now. So, like the definition I presented, there's a lot going on here graphically. And I'm gonna walk us through this from left to right, bit by bit, just really briefly, and then if there's questions about it, we can talk more about it during the discussion. So the first bit is the way we actually frame the entire resilience, our entire resilience process. And this focuses on answering four resilience questions and three resilience capacities. Now, the reason that this is important is because if you don't put a framing on what you mean by resilience in a particular place for a particular set of people, resilience becomes about everything. It becomes addressing all shocks and stresses for all people at all scales, which immediately becomes a problem for developing concrete, clear programming. So by answering these questions, it's a helpful way to put a concrete understanding of what we mean by resilience in a place. So the first question we ask is, resilience of what? This refers to what are the geographic boundaries of the place you're working in. Perhaps this is the Delta region of Myanmar. Maybe it's the communities in the High Himalaya region of Nepal. Perhaps it's an urban city in the Philippines or in Indonesia. You have to be explicit about the geographic context you're talking about. Second, you also have to be able to answer what ecological, social, and economic systems are important that span across that geographic context. The second question to answer is resilience for whom? Vulnerability differs across a landscape and across different subgroups within any one given population. We know now from experience and from increasing evidence that women experience shocks and stresses different than men, youth experience shocks and stresses different than adults, and even different livelihood groups will experience disturbances in different ways. So it's important to be explicit about who we're trying to build resilience for. Third is resilience to what? These are the disturbances or shocks and stresses that we're concerned about building resilience to. So these are things from ecological side. This could be in environmental degradation, things like deforestation. From an economic side, this could be something like the loss of an important international export market, the closing of an important border that controls imports and exports. It could be the steady rising prices of important inputs. The final question is resilience through what? This is where we're going to get to those three resilience capacities. We break down resilience capacities refer to the ability or the capacity to be able to manage shocks and stresses. And Mercy Corps breaks this down into three different categories based on how Christoph Benne categorized them, and that is into absorptive capacity, adaptive capacity, and transformative capacity. Absorptive refers to short-term ability to cope or absorb or manage in the short term a shock or stress. Adaptive capacity refers to the medium-term ability to be flexible or adaptive in the face of a shock or stress. And transformative refers to the role that institutions, both formal and informal, and policies have in terms of helping communities manage and increase their well-being even in the face of those shocks or stress. So how do we apply that resilience thinking in terms of a process? Well, we start off with stress. Stress stands for Strategic Resilience Assessments. This is Mercy Corps' methodology for understanding the complex social, ecological, and economic systems that communities are a part of. In doing so, we identify, prioritize, and understand the links between different shocks and stresses across those systems, and we identify those capacities that I just talked about that are needed by community members to be able to manage those shocks and stresses. We do these assessments, we do them at the program level, but we also do them at the country level to develop country-level strategies. The output of this process are theories of change. I think many of us know what theories of change are. They're a way of articulating what we hope our long-term impact will be and the conditions we need to achieve in order to be able to make that long-term impact a reality. These are really important to develop. The output of that the stress process or the strategic resilience assessment process. At Mercy Corps, they're designed around building absorptive, adaptive, and transformative capacity. We design these not only at we develop these not only for individual programs, but at the country strategy level as well. And that's really important because it's important to articulate how our programs are going to achieve a certain impact that we're hoping to have. But we also recognize that resilience requires pretty long-term timeframes and multiple touch points that no one program is going to be able to address in a short period of time. So what we need to understand is at a country scale, what's our strategy for achieving for building resilience and having the overall well-being impact that we want? And how are each of our individual programs adding up to a portfolio of approaches that can help us to achieve that? And if we design these in clear and measurable ways, we're actually able to manage for program impact much more than we would be without. What I'm referring to here is the ability to actually engage adaptive management techniques to be able to learn through actual implementation on the ground. The stress process that I mentioned earlier is an important step in understanding how the systems in which communities function and how shocks and stresses manifest. But we recognize that we're never going to learn everything we can about these complex environments just through a single assessment. So we recognize that through implementing our programs, we're going to learn a whole lot more. But we're only going to be able to learn a lot more is if we actually, one, instill in our programs a culture of learning, meaning that people are getting together and actually discussing what they're learning and reflecting on what our assumptions were in a particular place, but also if our M&E systems are set up in the right way to not just monitor, are we ticking off the boxes that we told the donor we would do, but also are our assumptions correct? Did these activities lead to the outcomes we expected? And are those outcomes actually having the impact that we would have hoped? If we're doing that, then we'll be able to, over time, build an evidence base for certain approaches that we can start to share out with not just the Mercy Corps audience, but with development practitioners around the world. But this is only possible if we start by analyzing systems, by designing measurable theories of change, by testing those theories of change and learning from them in the field, and then building that evidence base over time. So I'm now going to turn this over to Sasha to help us move from all this theory and high-level stuff to more concrete programs on the ground.
I'm going to very quickly touch on a couple of Mercy Corps examples of how we've been working to integrate market system development and resilience, and I'm just going to go through them briefly in the hope that we can have a deeper conversation afterwards. So, yeah, I'm just going to very quickly touch on a case study from Uganda and one from Nepal. And to begin with Uganda, the Revitalizing Agriculture Incomes and New Markets in Uganda is a four-year USDA and Walmart Foundation funded program working in northern Uganda, and it was designed as a classic market system development program in the context of a post-conflict environment with a fragile ecosystem, but it was not designed with an overarching resilience objective. But it did have dual goals of economic prosperity and food security. And this program was very successful and looked at, it took the classic approach of we went in, we assessed key sectors that had potential for income growth within the target population, primarily agro-pastoralists. We looked at different crops that had high value, and one of the ones we highlighted was sesame. And then we did the classic market development approach, working on all levels of the integrated value chains, working on support systems, infrastructure, contract farming, input linkages to input supplies, et cetera. And about midway through the program, we did a detailed external midterm evaluation that looked into how we had achieved the program objectives so far. And one of the immediate things we found is that the focus on sesame had impact, and in this slide, it's simsim is the local word for sesame, but what had happened is that farmers, for almost 40% of their agricultural production was now in sesame. So we found some significant positive impacts from this program, particularly this average 80% increase in farmer income, and all of the signs of market system improvement that we hope to see. We introduced new lead firms into the region, both in input sales and contract farming. There was a nascent network growing, a lot of crowding in of new players. So everything you want to see at the midterm of a market system program. In the 2 years since this program was developed, Mercy Corps had really increased our knowledge of resilience, our understanding of the nuances. And so we also wanted to take a look at what we were doing to this population and whether their resilience had increased. And so we dug in on some other questions. We did a bunch of focus groups, a lot of interviews, and found some unintended negative impacts. And in particular, what we found is that even though farmer income had increased greatly, and in fact, about 25% of the farmers had actually shifted from below the poverty line to above the poverty line, food insecurity had not declined in the region, and malnutrition was still a problem. This sort of turns on its head the underlying market assumption that if you increase farmers' incomes, they will just buy more food and be fine. So we dug in deeper into this issue, and what we found was that even though farmers' incomes had increased greatly, they were not making the choice to spend that money on food. And what they were doing was instead spending money on equipment and other hard assets, and they were reducing their production of some of the traditional crops that they had consumed and then sold the excess. So they were producing sesame, their incomes were increasing, but they were not making the choice to spend their cash on food. And so, in fact, the long-term resilience of the household was declining in many cases. The other thing we found was that most of this farmer increase in income was due to the global price of sesame. And there was a concern that in the long term, we were increasing the farmers' vulnerabilities to a decline in sesame prices, and that they were much more vulnerable to a single global shock. So when we stepped back and looked at this overall program, which was meeting all of its targets for its market system work, but looked at what did we need to do to actually increase the resilience of this population. And there's a few things we're working on now. One is that looking at a diversity of crops that have different influences. So there's white sorghum, maize, chia seeds that have different markets, different influences. In some cases, different climate impacts. Also looking at behavior change and messaging, and how do we get deeper messaging out to the population about spending choices, looking at financial education. And we were doing a lot of work with radio information, which was great at a certain level, but we realized was not getting to the depth of behavior change we needed. And then we also looked at how could we capitalize on the increase in income from sesame. And the fact is that farmers do have a significant amount of income now. They didn't, but how could we help them use that money more wisely through better investments, through diversification of income, through financial safety nets like insurance, et cetera, to actually use that money to increase their resilience and not turn it into spending. So that just highlights one of the interesting things we've discovered, which is that there is not an automatic correlation between market system development and resilience. And just assuming that if we improve markets and markets are more efficient and more inclusive, the populations we care about will be more resilient. You have to be much more intentional about what that resilience is and how you're reaching it. To turn this around to a very different example, so that was an example of putting resilience onto a market development program. In Nepal, we had a situation of decades of disaster risk reduction and disaster response programming, annual floods and landslides, and basically this never-ending cycle of disasters, disaster response, and unsustainable disaster risk reduction programming. So we went in with a new program in 2012 funded by the Margaret A. Cargill Foundation, with the theory that if we applied a market system approach to DRR, we could actually lead to resilience in the population. And what we did was basically combine this idea of looking at what the disaster risks were with appropriate market system interventions to combine the two. So to give a simple example, sugarcane. What we did, the way we started this program was we went in first and looked at the shocks and stresses of this population. And this is in the mid-hills and the Terai, the flatter lands of Nepal. And we looked at what were the major shocks and stresses they were facing, and then what were the key market systems that influenced that. So sugarcane is a crop that's a traditional crop in Nepal. It has a good local market. It's also been classified by the government of Nepal as a growth sector, so they're investing in it. Sugarcane has the added advantage that it can be grown in the silty riverbeds, which can reduce river cutting and flooding on the annual cycles and can actually convert silt into productive farmland. So basically, sugarcane was a clear market system that made sense from both an income perspective for the farmers and a disaster risk reduction. And we then went in and did a classic market system approach. We promoted the production of sugar cane with additional bamboo fencing for flooding protection. We worked to connect them with input suppliers. We brought in buyers and promoted the production of sugar cane, and in fact, eventually got a molasses mill that was operating nearby to move into the area because there was so much sugar cane production. And so the approach was a pretty classic market system approach, but in a sector that we knew had a significant disaster risk reduction impact. The next example is a little bit more complex, and that is dairy. Up in the hills of Nepal, we realized dairy was a significant income source. But any of you who have worked in dairy know that cattle have a very complex relationship with the environment, and they can cause significant degradation of natural resources. But it was a sector we couldn't ignore because it was so important to the population. So what we did was dug into the dairy sector, looking not just at the constraints and opportunities for incomes, but also the constraints and opportunities around environmental protection. And we zeroed in on the issue of fodder. And traditionally, what farmers were doing was just letting their cows graze the hillsides randomly. And that was leading to degradation of the ground cover and then landslides in the rains. We worked with the farmers to increase planting of appropriate crops on the hillsides that could be fodder, but also helped maintain the hillside. And so that reduced erosion. We then worked with the farmers to change their practices. So rather than letting the cows just graze randomly, they started corralling them in certain areas so that they grazed in a more sustainable manner and reduced the degradation of the hillsides. But they also started doing more cutting of fodder from the hillsides and feeding them in the stables. And that what that meant was not just reduced degradation of the hillsides, but they had more control over the nutrition of the cows, and that led to a higher milk fat content, higher milk quality, which meant their incomes increased. So then we combined that push intervention of improving the quality of the milk and the fodder production with classic pull approaches of linking into chillers and dairies, linking to some traditional dairy products that are more appropriate for remote environments. So then we worked up the value chain. But this illustrates a situation in which it wasn't picking the right sector, it was a matter of picking the right intervention within the sector to meet these twin goals of building resilience and improving the market. And so the key here is just that you have to be very intentional about this. We had two overlapping systems, and we did a very complex set of analyses that Elliot and I can go into further to figure out what were the appropriate interventions in this context. Now, I don't want to finish on a negative note, but one of the interesting things we've discovered in these programs and others is some practical challenges around integrating market system development and resilience. And as we know, and as AID pointed out in the resilience paper, both of these approaches have very long time frames. One of the challenges with that in this environment in which we work, which is driven by donors, governments, other stakeholders' desires for quick wins, good numbers, lots of activities, is that there can be pressure to shortcut one system or the other to achieve those initial results. So in the case of Nepal, which was overarching a DRR program, we started off doing more direct training, direct work with the farmers than we would ideally like to under a market system approach because we wanted to show that DRR impact. The flip side is, you know, if you're trying to prove farmer income is increasing, you can pick sectors that maybe don't have the same resilience impacts because you need to show those numbers. And so it may be if we really want to integrate market system development and resilience, we need to look at shifting program time frames, looking at different approaches and different expectations for how do we actually get to impact and what do we see in the interim. So that's a very quick rundown of a couple examples, and we're happy to talk further.